Joining us now on Texans Radio, it's Nestor Aparicio from Baltimore. And Nestor, I call you a talk radio host, a media mogul, former sports writer. What do I call you here? Welcome to the show, my friend.
Oh, you know, just call me ready for football here in January. You know, we don't play a lot of home January games here over all the years of Joe Flacco and Ray Lewis and Ed Reed. We figured out Ed Reed only played 3 Raven home playoff games in his career. That's kind of hard to believe. You think about how often they played in January, but all those games were on the road. We ran road trips with my radio station. Joe Flacco in 08, 09, 10, 11, finally win in 12 and into 13. But, you guys were on the front end of something pretty special there, and you've had a couple of those things going on around here. It's more like Super Bowl or bust because the Ravens are expected to win the Super Bowl, and that's really never been the case really in all the 3 decades they've been in existence.
Well, Nestor, you've seen it all there in Baltimore. First question out of the gate is, some people there tell me there's a vibe of, can Lamar really raise his game in the postseason where it needs to go? Clearly, he's an MVP player. Can he do that in the postseason? He's won 1 playoff game. Do you think there's something to that? Is that in their heads at all, or is that just outside looking in and the Ravens are just fine heading into this thing?
Man, it's been crazy, right? You guys have had your own drama there with your quarterbacks and everything that happened there. We had an offseason here where nobody in the league wanted him last year, and the Ravens, restricted tagged him, which, you know, was kind of insulting to think he'd be a $30 million quarterback instead of a $50 million quarterback. And then there were no bids on him. This comes after 2 years where he was unavailable to play in the playoffs. I mean, they were very good in the regular season the last 2 years, and then he got hurt sometime between Halloween and Thanksgiving, and by Christmas they were, DOA, and last year almost beat the Bengals in a playoff game with Tyler Huntley, who's a backup quarterback, but they've improved dramatically. And Roquan Smith's been you guys saw them in week 1. They were just feeling their way. It was Todd Monken's first game, and they were without J.K. Dobbins at that point, without a lot of players really in September and early October. They're healthier than they've been. So I guess the case, if you want me to make the case for what they are and how they're going to be different this January, Roquan Smith, Kyle Hamilton, Justin Madubuike, it appears as though Marlon Humphrey will not be available for this game. And if that's the case, that certainly, helps the Texans offense. In regard to Lamar, weapons around him, right? And the Mark Andrews drama continues, and no one plays that the head games better than the Harbaugh family of who's going to play and who's not, and who's healthy and who's going to run around on Tuesday or Wednesday. The notion that your defense, D'Amico Ryan's going to have to prepare for Mark Andrews, I don't think you're seeing a prime version of Mark Andrews if he makes the field. I think he'd be a spot player if he plays. A guy named Isaiah Likely, who's really emerged the last 6 to 8 weeks as Mark Andrews has tried to heal up from an ankle injury, to be a very complimentary part of their offense. A guy named Charlie Kohler was a backup tight end, got some action as well. But it's all about Odell Beckham. It's about Zay Flowers. Bateman is also a first-round draft pick. Aguilar, they have an embarrassment of riches. They're getting Devin Duvernay, their kick returner back. A lot of you Texas folks may remember him. They're getting him back for this game for special teams, and they have the best kicker in the history of kickers. And there's another Texas guy there for you in Justin Tucker. So they haven't played a game like this in this environment at home since before the plague. It was a huge disappointment when Derrick Henry ran them over as a 1 seed back in 2019. Mm. And they really haven't had a team like this. And there's just a lot going on, Mark. The coaching staff, right? Like, everybody's coming to take their coaches now, right? Harbaugh's never had this happen where Monken's had a couple of interviews. Mike McDonald, their hotshot defensive coordinator. I mean, these guys are going to be gone, and Lamar has a huge contract now. And they've got a lot of guys that just won't financially be able to bring them back because they've just played so well all year long. I mean, Mark, they weren't behind by 2 scores all year long until the last game where they weren't trying and Lamar didn't play. They had a lead at the 2-minute warning in their first 16 games. They should have won. I mean, they were good enough to win all 16 games. So they have not had a week where they've come out and had a flat tire and fallen behind 14-3. And the common thought years ago was, well, Lamar can't come back from that. They fall down 2 touchdowns. And he probably couldn't because he probably didn't have complimentary players. They didn't have a sophisticated running game at that point. He certainly wasn't being utilized or asked to be a pocket passer in the way that he's really emerged in this last 8 or 10 weeks to be able to stand in the pocket, pat the ball, move around the pocket. None of that ever existed because he never allowed that tape to exist because he just took off, you know, and people thought he couldn't do it. Well, now he is doing it, and it makes it even more dangerous when you've got to spend Mississippi 6, 7, and 8 defending Zay Flowers while Lamar runs around behind the line of scrimmage to, you know, beat you 35 yards down the field with his arm instead of taking off with his leg.
Nestor Aparicio, WNST, Baltimore Positive, joining us on Texans Radio. Nestor, John Harbaugh, what a tremendous coach, a tremendous job he's done. I know everybody wants more postseason success, but you talked about it. These coordinators, hot properties, but you go back, I mean, he's had a bunch of them who have left for other things over the course of time. Can you describe his leadership style? What makes him good? Because when you're winning with a guy like Joe Flacco and then you have to transition into Lamar Jackson, that's a very different deal, but they've been able to do it. What are your thoughts on the subject?
Well, the pliability of his ability to survive Flacco being dealt out and them using, I mean, Lamar sort of saved his job, as people here would tell you, in regard to that Flacco to Lamar year. Lamar came in and saved the day, and here we are 5 years into it. Harbaugh's never moved, where his brother's out seeking a job every single year. I think he has a lot of similarities with his brother. I don't think I need to tell you that in the Harbaugh family tree of running sort of a collegiate atmosphere. You know, it's real rah-rah. It's real faith-based. It's real family, collegiate, getting guys to buy into that. And they have a very comfortable building out there over the course of time because everybody knows everybody. DeCosta and Ozzie Newsome and Joe Ortiz, those guys have been there forever. And, you know, some of the guys have left. Joe Ortiz has had many opportunities to leave. Phil Savage left and never came back, and he was an architect 20 years ago of getting Ray Lewis and John Ogden drafted and those guys, and Ed Reed as well. We're talking three generations now and two long generations of coaches from Billick to Harbaugh. And Mike Tomlin would mirror that, and Belichick, and maybe even in New Orleans what Sean Payton did, where, you know, you survive 15 years as an NFL coach in one place. Marvin Lewis did in Cincinnati. I don't know there's going to be a whole lot of that, especially when you see the Philadelphias and the Dallases threatening their coaches when they've had a lot of success in the regular season. And Buffalo, you know, a lot of success in the regular season, but only one team's going to win the Super Bowl. And the expected team is, I guess, the Ravens or the 49ers. And there's just going to be palpable disappointment all the way around if anything derails that this year, because they've just been so good. And, if you have the Aaron Schatz's and the PFF and the people that measure DVOA, I mean, they're kind of a legendary team of balance, because their offense and defense have not just been complimentary, they've been kind of dominant, beating up on the Lions, beating up on the 49ers on Christmas night. I mean, all that's all gross, awesome, cool, tacky, regular season, running the score up, which is a Harbaugh family tradition as well. They've done all that, but they haven't really had that 21-3 halftime lead at home in a division game. And by the way, Mark, this is something really cool for you, because, you know, I'm an old Houston Oilers fan, right? So,
right.
And I remember the Oilers AFC championship games in the 70s in Pittsburgh and the ice and Earl Campbell and all that. Baltimore has not hosted an AFC championship game since 1971 with the Colts and the Oakland Raiders and a very young John Madden in Baltimore in 71. That was the Super Bowl V season where the Colts beat the Cowboys. And so we have not had an AFC championship game here during the Ravens' tenure, even though they have played in four championship games and won two of them. But all on the road, Oakland, New England, New England, and Pittsburgh. So this, and they've lost this game a couple of times at home, right? They've lost this game in 06. They beat you guys in a game in 11, but it was a road championship game. It's when New England and it's when Roethlisberger and Brady and Manning were sort of ruling everything and playing and hosting these games every year in those places. We haven't been that team. You know, we've only had eight home seven home postseason, but this will be our eighth home postseason game in 28 years, despite winning two championships and really despite making the playoffs so about, I think, 12 times in all these years. It's, you know, a lot of playoff bursts, not a lot of home games.
That's amazing. And you're the perfect guy to ask this next question. And by the way, obviously no Houston pro team has been to an AFC championship game since 1979. So the Texans are trying to get that done. But Nestor, tell me, what is it like? Because the Texans just got through a game a few weeks ago when they went to Nashville and played the Titans wearing the old Oiler uniforms and they beat them. So what is it like when the Colts go to Baltimore? And you have to have a lot of old timers looking at those uniforms, feeling the feelings. What is that like for the fans in Baltimore, the old time fans especially?
I love you say I'm the perfect guy to talk to about this because I grew up in East Baltimore. My last name's Aparicio. I grew up in a baseball family, but my family loved football and my adopted family took me to games. I mean, my first game was Joe Namath in 1973 at Memorial Stadium. So like I still have my Colts belt buckle from Sears and Roebuck in the '70s. And, you know, I was the kid with the NFL bed sheets and the lunchbox and you're like, oh, that's the kid I was in the '70s, but I love the Oilers. The Oilers were my team. I love the blue. Then Earl came and, you know, Pastorini comes on my show. And, you know, so seeing the resurrection of the Derek and of the colors, I mean, it's my childhood for me. And then my team left when I was 15 in 1984. The Oilers were the last game ever played at Memorial Stadium both times. The Ravens and the Colts both had the Oilers come and the Tennessee Oilers at the end. But the Oilers were the last jerseys to walk out of Memorial Stadium for both of the franchises in Baltimore. And, you know, I had an Oilers pennant on my wall when I was a kid. I had an Oilers lamp. You know, I mean, I still have a whole box of my Oilers stuff. So I treasure that stuff. And I'm friends with Steph Stradley and John McClain and a bunch of your folks down there, and they know what an Oiler guy is. And I actually was down in Austin and Houston seeing Springsteen a year ago when he played down at the Toyota Center. And I like going into thrift shops trying to buy old Oiler stuff, right? So I'm on eBay and looking at this, and I bought a Pastorini jersey and a Warren Moon jersey last year. And seeing that out on the field really pissed me off and angered me. And seeing Tennessee sort of gobble that up. And then the thing that really bothered me more than anything was seeing Derrick Henry jerseys that were Oilerized or current Titan players. And then seeing Vrabel wear the hat and he got fired. I thought it was really tacky. And I love the Oilers and I'm a faraway guy. I have no affinity or Houston civic pride. I'm not that guy. But I do have a sense of like, I know what it's like because I'm a Colts fan. And I know what it was like to not have a team here for a dozen years and to fight to get a team back and to have, you know, the NFL take teams and put them in places like Nashville and the Liberty Bowl before they even came to Baltimore. And we had to go steal a football team. You know, you can Google that, Art Modell, right? But it's been a while. Yeah. But, you know, I'm the kid that grew up watching my father cry in the kitchen the morning the Mayflowers, you know, March 28th, 1984, not to be specific. But, you know, I feel that. And to see them do that in Tennessee, I just thought it was, it's almost a tragedy for me, Mark, because all of my Oiler stuff, I now just kind of like want to put it on eBay. I'm like, you know, if everybody's going to wear it, it's not really cool. And if Tennessee's going to usurp it, I'm not a Titans fan. You know what I mean? I don't look like a Titans fan, you know, because I'm not. And I don't approve of it. You know what I mean? So that will not stop me from wearing my Pastorini jersey. I'll have you know, just so you know, I'll still wear that. But I feel for your folks who felt that because I felt it. And we feel that when they say the Colts are wearing the 56 throwback jerseys, which they did, by the way, the day before you guys got tortured, the Colts wore their 56 throwbacks. And I'm like, they're wearing their 56 throwbacks. The game should be in Baltimore.
Interesting. Well, the Texans took care of business that day and beat the old Oilers or whatever they are. So that was cool.
That's Nestor how they got Aparicio. Here today, right? Literally.
Yeah. Well, it's one of the very important victories along the way. Nestor, tell everybody how you handle the business of radio and video, WNST, Baltimore Positive. It's very interesting. You have your own station and you've really carved out an amazing niche there in Baltimore.
I don't know. I mean, there's no strategy to it. You know, I was a kid that loved sports. I was a sports writer in the 80s. I went to work at the newspaper, legendary people. I actually worked with Richard Justice. So I think I'm thinking of people you guys would know in your market who made time there. You know, other people that worked in TV, Butch Alsander, you know, other people down there came through Baltimore. And I knew all these people. I mean, I've been doing this since I was 15 years old. So I'm 55. I'm 39 years as of the other day. doing this professionally from newspaper, and then I went on radio when I was 23 years old, and I bought time. And you know, this was a period of time where Camden Yards was coming online in the early 90s and Cal Ripken, but there was no football team here. And then the intersection of the football team coming in 95 and 96, sports radio, and I had a show that I bought airtime on a big band radio station. Sports radio became more accessible when, you know, the Fan was online in New York, and West Coast was starting to pick up and syndicated and ESPN radio. And in Baltimore, nobody was doing it. And they said it couldn't be done. And I love that stuff because I have people in the Baltimore Sun who ran WBAL and other big AM stations saying that I would never survive, that it could never work. And we just celebrated our 25th year on August 3rd. So we're in the middle of our 25-year celebration, and it's all up at BaltimorePositive.com. I've actually been going through our 25 stories of glory and all the cool stuff we've done community-wise, charity-wise, fun nights, memorable nights when Deion Sanders came out, and memorable nights where I put Mike Tomlin and Brian Billick and John Harbaugh on a dais for leukemia and saving lives. So we're doing a really cool charity thing during the Super Bowl week. We're calling it a cup of soup or bowl. We're actually doing it for the Maryland Food Bank. It's going to be a marathon radio featuring 100 charities during Super Bowl week here, during the coldest week of the year. And, you know, I've been doing a lot of things, written books, done all that stuff. But, you know, at this point, it's just nice to be recognized, to have people come and want to hear what I have to say and know there's integrity behind it, some wisdom behind what we try to do. But more than that, I try to talk to the smartest people in not just in sports anymore. We have a lot of musicians and local people and politicians, civic leaders, because Baltimore's challenged, you know what I mean? Like a lot of urban areas are. So we called our thing Baltimore Positive back during the plague. I'm in about the fourth year of operating it under that brand, because we just thought that, you know, the city needed more uplifting. And I mean, I'm a champion for the city, but I can also be a critic of the city while we try to lift it. So, you know, that's where I am. And that, you know, sports has been a big, big part of my life, and football has been a big part of my life, and obviously baseball. And it's just been a wonderful year of resurrection for my community in that way. We won two division championships for the first time since 1971 in Baltimore, literally, right? Ooh. Where the Orioles and the Colts that year both won their divisions. So it's the first time that's happened in, you know, and you guys could say the same thing about a year when the Oilers and the Astros and the Rockets were all good. That's really hard to do, and to be that good, yep, especially when you play in a division with the Yankees and the Steelers. And, you know, it's just really hard to win any division in any year. But the Orioles were a little bit of a cautionary tale for what the Texans represent this week, because I know you guys are all Astros people there too, and playing the Rangers. And the Orioles were the best team in the American League going away. And they got wiped out, and they got wiped out. They took a weekend off, and then they didn't score, and they didn't pitch. The real concern here is Lamar having 20 days off, right? And a lot of the starters having 20 days off, and how that's going to affect the game. And we've talked so much about fast start, fast start, fast start. And if the fast start comes from the visiting guys, and your red people are all waving pom-poms, having a good time, that would be a challenge for the Ravens this year that they haven't seen, which is being behind at home on a really cold day early. That would be the formula. You know, Texans need to come to Baltimore and theoretically punch the Ravens in the mouth. And if they don't do that, it could be a long day, because the Ravens have made it a long day for a lot of really good football teams this year.
All right. We'll see what happens. Nestor, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate the time.
Appreciate you. I can't wait to get back down to Houston, brother.